Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Kierat Raymond, your host of Women Living Fully Radio. I'm so grateful you're here. Thank you for being here on this special day when we're going to be talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. Many of you have heard of this topic before, and you're probably accustomed to hearing about it from returning soldiers. But we're going to shed some light on the darkness of post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm also going to invite our guest, who's Deborah Kent, who is a retired Canadian Forces officer for 32 years, who has understands post-traumatic stress disorder. She also understands operational stress injury, and we're going to talk about that. And for those of you that are joining us live today, welcome. Welcome to our show. And if you're catching the replay, thank you so much for being here. Please feel free to share on your social media channels so that our message, our interview about post-traumatic stress disorder can reach more people. I want to tell you a little bit about our guest. And before I do, I just want to share something that I found, a recent study about post-traumatic stress disorder that was done at McMaster University in Hamilton. And they determined that 2.5% of the population is experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder. And this is not just military personnel. These are the everyday people that you meet walking down the street who have post-traumatic stress syndrome disorder, or they have some of the symptoms and they don't recognize that it could be PTSD. So I wanted to invite Deborah Kent. I absolutely love her. She is an advocate, a voice for those who have post-traumatic stress disorder or those that are not sure if they do. And Deborah has plenty of experience with it. And she's going to shed some light on what her experience has been and also shed some light and help you if you or someone you know may have some of these symptoms and what you can do. So Deborah, as I mentioned, served in the Canadian Forces for 32 years. She's a wife, a mother, a grandmother, she's a daughter, and she is a non-commissioned member who retired at the rank of Master Corporal. In her last 10 years of serving, she served with the Special Forces and has served overseas in Bosnia and Afghanistan with a short tour in Germany to support Bosnia and Somalia. She was released medically on December 31st in 2011 due to major depressive disorder, operational stress injury, and physical injuries. So that is why I invited Deborah to be our guest so she can share what she knows, what she's learned, and what she now does to help support people who have PTSD. If you're joining us live, you can call in with your questions. The number to call in is 713-955-0557. Again, it's 713-955-0557. Just hold on the line and I will get to you once Deborah and I have had a chance to have a bit of a chat. So welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you, Perrette. Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it, and I really respect what you do.
Well, thank you, and obviously thank you to you for serving and for your time today to help us talk about this very important subject. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and then when did you first know that you had PTSD?
I am still on my healing journey. I've moved down to live with my husband. We were did a 12-year long-distance relationship and then thought after being married for 2 years it might be an idea to live together. a lot of other people I know do a little backwards, but, you know, we figured to do it our own way.
Right.
I joined the military because I wanted to be a veterinarian, and then I looked at how much more school I'd have to do, and I thought, no, I don't want to do that. And I'm also not very strong in science. So I looked around and I thought, you know, I might as well join the military just for something to do, and then I'll figure out what I want to do later. And I wound up doing it for 32 years. It's no life like it. It's it was very challenging. It was very fulfilling at times. And, but there wasn't a lot of education on how to look after yourself, on self-care. And that's basically what burned me out. I was and am very mission-oriented, and it's like, ignore everything else and just get the mission completed. Still learning how to calm that down.
Right.
Sometimes not very successfully. But how I learned that I had post-traumatic stress, well, operational stress injury, it was about 2 years after I'd been released. I went to a Wounded Warrior weekend in Nipawin, Saskatchewan. And it really showed me that, you know, I was still worthwhile. I was still worth something. And, you know, there's such an accepting group of people, and it was such a healing weekend. And then I went and I started Isogenics, which gave my body the food it needed. So it could start working on itself, my body and my brain. And I went to a Standing Together conference in London, Ontario in September 2013. And there was a retired lieutenant colonel there who speaks about operational stress injury. And he, when he stood up there on the first slide, I'm looking at all the stuff, and I went, wow, if you got 4 out of 4, I guess you have it. And that's when I really realized that, you know what? I may not have been blown up. I may not have been shot. I may not have been, any, you know, seen all this stuff. But I had post-traumatic stress / operational stress injury. And that being able to realize that's what's wrong with me really helped me to heal. And yet I've been working with professionals since 2008. And that was the first realization. It's like, oh, my God, that's what it is. And the knowledge gave me the power to start looking for the proper help, you know, myself. Just knowing that it's, you know, I'm not just lazy, I'm not stupid, I'm not this or that. That's powerful.
Absolutely.
Because most of the time you think it's all in your head. Well, it actually is, because they've managed to, through a special type of fMRI, be able to look at people's brains and see there's an actual injury there. I tell people I don't really have post-traumatic stress disorder. I sprained my brain. I overused part of my brain, and I sprained it. So now I realize that, you know, just like with a sprained ankle, it never heals completely. You have to be careful in certain situations in that. But you can adapt, you can overcome, and you can have a full life again.
Yeah, and one of the... Absolutely, and that's why we're having this important conversation, so that those that have a loved one or themselves have some of these symptoms, have gone through something very traumatic, that they pay attention to it and not be ashamed by how they feel. One of the definitions that I found was really helpful to define the disorder, and as you mentioned earlier to me privately, the injury, right, the brain injury, is that it's a serious condition that can develop after a person has experienced or witnessed a traumatic or terrifying event in which serious physical harm occurred or was threatened. It's a lasting consequence of traumatic ordeals that cause intense helplessness or horror, such as sexual or physical assault, the unexpected death of a loved one, an accident of war or a natural disaster, or even a car accident. And then families of victims can also develop PTSD. So can emergency personnel, rescue workers, first responders, journalists, just to name a few. And some of the symptoms that were listed in some of my research was, you know, the re-experiencing of a traumatic event. Many people have vivid nightmares or flashbacks or thoughts of that event that seem come from nowhere. And these, they often avoid things that remind them of these events. Many feel startled very easily. They have a hard time concentrating, feel on edge, feel irritable, have problems sleeping. They may often feel like something terrible is about to happen, even when they are safe. And some people feel very numb and detached, and they may feel like things around them aren't real, feel disconnected from their body or thoughts, or have a hard time feeling emotions. So it's a really challenging place to be if you have PTSD, if you have this, as you were saying, you know, this brain injury that needs attention, that needs some assistance for you to get through it, right?
Oh, huge. And I mean, listening to all those things, I mean, I still have no real connection with my emotions. I'm working on it. But like feeling connections of love or joy or stuff like that. So what I do is I don't stress about it. I go, I just appreciate the small moments. Like if you see a butterfly or you see a kid laughing or you see sunshine and you stop in a sunbeam and enjoy it. That journey, and it's a long journey, and appreciate the moments. That's a big thing, of one of the things that really helps you to heal is to learn how to be in the moment. So yoga and meditation are extremely important. They teach you how to be in the moment where you are, and that helps with stopping the gerbils on the wheel. That's what I call them, gerbils on a wheel. Kick them off, you know, because that's where you start getting into the cycle of you looking at the pictures again, remembering the thing. And your brain doesn't know whether something is actually happening or if it's imagination. So you watch a movie, your brain thinks this is actually happening. I avoid watching horror flicks. I avoid watching war movies. I avoid watching anything that will trigger my adrenaline because I know it's a trigger. So I go, no, I don't need to put that in my brain. What you see, you cannot unsee. You have to put a lot more good stuff in there to get rid of the other stuff. So if you're continuously putting garbage in, that's what you're going to get. You know, you're going to keep your adrenaline up. You're going to keep your cortisol up. And that does so much damage to you. Adrenaline and cortisol are your fight, flight, or freeze hormones. And that's what triggers for post-traumatic stress injury or operational stress injury. We live in chronic stress. We need to turn it down. Because if you don't do it, you are physically damaging your brain. They say if you constantly, they've done studies, and constantly bathing your brain in cortisol shrinks your prefrontal cortex, your thinking part of your brain, and actually starts pre-Alzheimer's. They've got people in their 20s and 30s that are showing signs of pre-Alzheimer's because of chronic high stress. And it's just damaging. And there's a lot of things we can do for self-care. You know, and that's the big thing is when I came across cognitive behavior therapy, I all of a sudden was empowered in being able to do something about my own healing. Just like when I had my surgeries and I go do my physio, it wasn't the physio doing the work for me. It was the physio teaching me what I could do to help myself heal. Cognitive behavior therapy is about teaching you what you can do to help yourself heal with a professional teaching you how to use the tools. And it's showing you the toolbox so that when you come across a situation and you're not with the professional, you can go in the toolbox and pull out what you need to get through that situation. It's huge. And, so you know, many people. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
There's so many people out there who think, well, this person is so much worse off than me, you know, I shouldn't say anything. I just did a mental health first aid course, and one of the big things that jumped out at me was that if you look up the signs of depression and you look at it and you go, well, you know, I've been doing this, this, and this. If you have had those signs for more than 2 weeks, you need to get help. Most of us never go and see about our depression until we've been in it for 2 or 3 years. And that just makes the injury go deeper and deeper. So it's very, very important to talk to the people around you, you know, and find out, you know, how are you doing? How are you really doing? You know, have that connection, have that social interaction, because that will help stop people from isolating. The isolating is hugely damaging, and it's very easy to do because you think, well, I can't handle this, so I'll just pull away. I can't handle this, so I'll pull away. Yet there's so many people out there ready and willing to help. But you got to open up your mouth and tell them what's going on. Nobody can see inside your brain. And that's why I tell people what it's like. Like when I was first going through the OSI, trying to follow a conversation was almost impossible there's all these ping pong balls bouncing around in your head, and you got to try and follow one. Well, there's all these. Ever been to bingo? You see what the balls are doing inside there? That's what it's like inside your brain when you're dealing with OSI or PTSD. All those balls, trying to follow one in all those 52.
So for our listeners, I'm interviewing Deborah Kent on Women Living Fully Radio, and we're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder. And Deborah also understands operational stress injury, or OPI, as she referred to it. If you have a question for Deborah, you can call in at 713-955-0557. Again, that's 713-955-0557. So, Deborah, what were some of your first initial treatment options, and what did you discover along the way when it comes to treating this disorder and what's available to those who need the assistance and the help and the support?
I found out that you need to step up and say, look, there's something going on here. I need help. I self-referred myself to the psychiatrist at NDMC. And to be quite honest, prep yourself as to what they're supposed to do. Because for the longest time, I had no idea what a psychologist or a psychiatrist did. By the way, the only difference between the two is the psychiatrist can prescribe drugs. But I, you know, if you don't know what you're doing when you go in there, it's a waste of time. Okay, the psychologist is there to listen, ask questions, and help you come up with the solutions. And when you're first starting, you should be going at least once a week. And then because that helps you build a rapport, that helps you build trust. I didn't find that out for 2 years because I found that out when I went to called OSIS and found out from other people what they were doing. I went, you mean you go see your psychologist 3 times a week? You go see once a week? I was only going once a month. No wonder I wasn't going anywhere. I also did on my own. I sourced out different stuff. I listened, and I did alternative modalities of treatment. I did body talk. I did Reiki. I did, you know, a few other things that, you know, sort of seemed to be out on the fringe, but it's what I needed. I sourced it out. I also started with Isogenics, which gave my body the nutrition it needed so it could work on healing itself. It's just because when you're in a deep depression, you have no... I had food in my fridge. I'd open up the fridge, look at it, go, close the door, and then grab the chips and the coffee or the wine, you know, because I just couldn't even think as to what to eat or how to make it or have the energy to make it, you know. So then you put on weight, which, you know, that's one of the big things for women that causes more depression. But yeah. Get out there and ask for help. There's lots of peer support. There's lots of other support. It's just we have to do that first step and reach out and say, I need help. There's the EAP. There's online support through Royal Ottawa Hospital. They have a OSI mobile app. And it's free to everybody. I'm going to be sending you links to this so you could post it on your site. But
perfect,
what I really
you.
Discovered, you're welcome. What I really discovered is that it's up to us who are injured to put our hand up and say, I hurt. I don't know what's going on, but I hurt. If we had a broken leg, we go to the doctor. If we sprain our ankle, people notice because you're on crutches or something. When you sprain your brain, it's really hard for anybody to see it. They see it's very slow. It's like cooking a frog in water. You put it in warm, you know, in cool water, and it slowly adjusts itself as you turn up the heat. And the damage to your brain is slow over time because we find ways to cope, to keep doing the same things the same way. But we know inside there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So realize that it's okay to say, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm hurting somehow. And go get help. But nobody can give you the help unless you ask for it. You know, it's our responsibility as the injured person to get to ask for help.
And for those who are listening for a loved one, I had a few people come to me and say, you know, I'm going to be listening to the episode because I have a loved one who is showing very, very, you know, very similar signs of either depression or, you know, trauma and a trauma disorder. So I want to listen for them. So when you're, if you have a loved one who is in crisis, who is showing these signs, start learning more about what's available. You know, be a resource, be an advocate. Because as Deborah said, and you probably can attest to this, Deborah, when you're in that depression, when you're in the darkness of it, it's not always easy to raise your hand and say, I need help, because it's just too hard, right? It takes too much energy. So for a loved one who is in the journey with someone who is going through it, is educate yourself about the symptoms, educate yourself about what's available, you know, reach out to your mental health association in your area and ask how you can help your loved one so that your loved one can feel supported and not necessary, especially when they're in the darkness of it, right, Deborah? They might not have the ability to raise their hand and say, I need help. They just might not be able to do it. So we need to be an advocate for our loved ones, correct?
That is correct. I mean, there were some days it took all I could to just breathe. That was all the energy I had, was to force myself to keep breathing. And sometimes what you need to do as the helper, you make sure if you are the one, the loved one of someone who's going through these crises, make sure you look after yourself. Do your self-care, too, because you've got to be that strength. And there is secondary post-traumatic stress, secondary operational stress injury. People need to understand that you cannot care for someone if you don't look after yourself. It's very, very important. And it's very often that the caregiver winds up having an injury because you pour yourself out. Think about a pitcher of water. You pour out. If you never take any time to write that pitcher back up and get refilled, you run out. So doing self-care for yourself, doing meditation, doing yoga, doing something that makes you happy will help you help others. It will give you the strength to carry on. Today I went to look up some sites so I could pass them on. The best thing is PTSD resources in Canada, and I got so many great resources. Google it, and also realize it's a journey. It's like a long-distance marathon. It's one step at a time, one day at a time, and you're not always going forward. Sometimes success is when you stand your ground and you make sure that what you've done, you really incorporate in your life, where you move forward and make sure that you understand the lessons. You understand, okay, so if I go into this situation, it does this to me, but I can do this so that I can cope with it. To start socializing, I used to go out for a walk and just smile and say hello. Some days that's all I could do. But after a while, it got easier, and I realized, okay, I can handle this. So then I'd push myself a little bit into my discomfort zone and maybe talk to somebody. But it was always, you know, say if I was having a hard day or if it was a day I'd had therapy, I didn't bother doing that because I already knew that I was worn out. But you do it a step at a time, just like doing weights. You don't pick up 100 pounds and do 20 reps, right? You start out with 10 pounds and you do some reps. And it's like, okay, I can handle that. And the next time you maybe do 15 pounds. It's the same with your mental health recovery. It's a bit at a time. And keep a journal. Keep a journal because that really shows you how far you've come. Because you can look back on your bad days and go, oh, God, I'm never getting anywhere. Oh, this is so bad. I'm just going to be stuck here forever. And then you look at your journal and you see, wow, I've already come this far. And write a gratitude journal. Three things that you're grateful for each day. That, you know what? I was able to get up today. I had a shower today. You know, I felt a spark of joy today. And just focus on the good things, because there's so many other things going around in our brain. The world is so willing to fill your brain with negative. It's up to us to decide what we put in our brain. Watching the news, I stopped listening to a lot of negative stuff, and I started looking at really positive stuff, positive affirmations, looking at stuff that took care of me. Because you know what? I'm the most important, because if I'm not there, then I can't be there for anybody else. You know, so I started being more selfish with my time. And sometimes people don't like that. They don't like it when you change. But it's like, no, I have to look after me. And after I'm better, then I can be there for you.
Mm-hmm.
But realize that you have to set some time aside for yourself. You have to, first thing in your planner is you plan out when you're going to do your workout, when you're going to do your socialization and stuff like that. There's four pillars to mental health: exercise, socialization, nutrition, and, okay, the fourth one will come to me. But
yeah, I'm trying to think what it would be too.
Yeah, exercise, nutrition, socialization. Oh, sleep.
Sleep.
Yeah, one I have a bit of a problem with. Make sure you look up sleep hygiene. One, make sure the room is a comfortable temperature, just a little cooler than whatever. Have enough cover so you're comfortable. Have the room dark. No computer and stuff like that for an hour before you go to bed. If you have a lot on your mind, sit down and write it out. Do not sit there and worry about grammar or spelling or whatever you're saying. Just write it out. Get the stuff down. Because then your brain goes, oh, I don't have to hang on to it anymore because it's written down. And it can let you relax. You know, say you wake up in the middle of the night and you're going, oh, you got all these gerbils running in your head. You know, if you can't put up the stop sign and say, hey, enough, and it, you know, after about 15 minutes it's still going on, get up, go somewhere else, sit down and write in your journal. Write down the stuff that's on your mind, and then go back to bed. I listened to a program on ideas on CBC Radio 1 back in 2005, December 2005. It was a three-part program about sleep. And one of the things, we have such a strange idea about sleep. You're not supposed to sleep for 7.5 hours solid. It used to be, it was first and second sleep. You'd go to sleep, sleep for about 3 or 4 hours. You get up for an hour or two, and then you go back to sleep for another 3 hours. And that was way your body was actually in a rhythm. In the middle of your sleep cycle, don't freak out about it. Just go, okay, must be something on my mind. Sit down, write it down, or think about it. And then go back to sleep. You know, organize your day so that you can sleep. If there's a program on TV you want to watch at 11 o'clock at night, you got to get up at 5 or 6, use your PVR. You know, watch it, you know, the next day at 5. So what if you're not right up on top of, you know, the latest Walking Dead, you know, which I don't watch. But it doesn't matter. Just tell people, spoiler alert, I haven't watched it yet. Get your sleep, look after you, and you'll be, and then you can be there for others. You can do your job, you can be there for your family and your friends, but always make sure you have time for you where you can just be relaxed, download. Don't always be on spins. Like, I noticed you're taking your dogs out and teaching them how to do sledding. I mean, when you're there, you're there, right? You're just there with your dogs and out in the environment. And how do you feel when you do that?
That's awesome.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so
finding something that is relaxing and fun and outdoors and, yeah.
Yeah, and you're in the moment, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Need to be.
So, and then when you're in the moment, your brain, your subconscious can be working on other stuff. You know, just relax and enjoy where you are when you're there. And then when you've done that, move on to something different. Maybe then you deal with, you know, like 8 bins of paperwork that I haven't dealt with yet. But, you know.
That's the work that I do, Deborah. I help people simplify their lives.
I wish you were down here because, I mean, you're, Sylvie from your group, she was so amazing with me when I moved. And
yeah.
I so appreciate it, and I wish you guys were down here. because dang, you'd be in my house.
Well, on that note, I'm going to share with our listeners that there are resources on my website to help those times where you are overloaded and you feel overwhelmed. This is a little sidetrack, but it still affects those who are going through any type of, you know, I'm not feeling well, I'm overloaded, I'm overwhelmed, I'm in a crisis. You need to say yes to the right things and no to the wrong things. And I talk a lot about that on my blog. I talk about it in my newsletter. I want people to know that, like you said, there are things that you can do. And self-care is one of the main pillars of Women Living Fully, because we give so much to everybody else. And rarely do we give back to ourselves. So it's so important that we do that. And you covered so many great things that we can do on a day-to-day basis, not do it every single day, all the pieces. You do one a day. And you do things that bring you joy. You do things that help you to relax. You do things to let go of the extra stuff that you don't need, the physical, the mental, and the emotional, so that you have time, you have energy, you have money for the things that really matter, for the things that are most important to you. So there are things that you can do to really help yourself, as Deborah was saying, when you're in a crisis, when you're going through either depression or you're experiencing post-traumatic stress, if you're a caregiver to someone and your time is dedicated to them, you need to take time for yourself. You have to. So we're almost done with our interview, Deborah. So I wanted to close off by giving you the opportunity to say, what do you really want our listeners to know? What's, you know, the thing that you, the nugget, the information, the tip, whatever it is for you, the most important thing that you want them to know should they need to help themselves or someone that they love?
One big thing that came to mind just now is that one thing, the elephant in the room is suicide.
Yeah.
And suicidal ideation, when you think about suicide a lot, when you think about doing it, suicide is not about wanting to die. Suicide is about wanting the pain to stop.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I had suicidal ideation. I chose back in June of 2001 to not kill myself when I was in Bosnia. And I made a promise to my higher power that, all right, you know, if I got to be around here till the time you told me, then there, you know, we made a deal that I had to make a difference. I had to be physically healthy, mentally healthy, and I could not be a burden on anyone. And I said, if, you know, we're going to have that kind of deal, then I'll stick around. Big thing about suicide is that the thing, real thing that stopped me was something I'd read in a Sylvia Brown book, is that people who commit suicide don't get to go home. They have to come right back. And I went, I ain't coming back. You know, I'll do my time, and I'm going home, and I'm staying home. I'm not coming back. So that has stopped me from killing myself. And because sometimes the weight of the depression, the weight of everything else is just so heavy. Yeah, depression actually causes physical pain. And you just, some days, you just don't have the energy to even breathe. So that's where having a friend, having someone come in and say, you know what, I'm here. I may not know what to say, but I'm here for you. You know, let's go for a walk, or how about I bring you a tea, and just be there. And sometimes you don't have to say a word. It's just knowing there's a human who cares about you. But anybody who has suicidal ideation, anybody who's talking about suicide, call 911, please. Call 911, get a hold of a mental health association. There is help. There are some medications they can give you that will really help lift that black, heavy blanket. And that will give you enough light to be able to carry on. Suicide isn't a joke. Suicide isn't, oh, yeah, somebody's just trying to get attention. Suicide is about somebody being in pain. They're in pain. So we would relieve a broken leg. Let's help relieve a sprained brain.
Absolutely. And one other tip that I'll add to what you said is, if you are having ideas of suicide, do reach out, do get help. Have an SOS buddy as well, someone who's your go-to person. You know what? I'm not having a good day. It's really, really dark today. Even if you send them a text, SOS, they know, drop everything. I need support, or I need to show up for that person right away. So I would recommend having an SOS buddy if this is something that you're going through, and don't wait to get the help. Reach out, do get support, and do not go through with it, because your life is important. You absolutely do matter, and there are people who want to help you relieve the pain and get through this, because you matter. Your life is important. Your loved ones love you, and we need you to be here. So we want you to get the help and support that is available to you. So no shame, no guilt. Pick up the phone, reach out, and have someone there for you. Deborah, this is great. Thank you so very much for being part of our episode on, post-traumatic stress disorder, for talking about operational stress injury, for sharing your story and sharing some resources and some things that you've done that have helped you, that help others. And I know that this interview will help someone. I know it. These things are designed. The subject matter came up. You're available. Somebody needs to hear this message today, or when they listen to it. So thank you so very much. I'm in deep gratitude for your service and for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Corette, for having me on. I know that one of the big things I know is my mission in life is that you don't go through a valley just for yourself. You go through stuff so that you can share and help other people, so they know that there's a light, that you can show them the path. Or better yet, you guys can work together and build a bridge so people don't have to go through that valley. You know, I share about it because I don't want anybody else to have to go through this. It sucks. It really sucks. But the best thing I've had is because I bothered to talk to my family about what was going on inside, they could help me. They could be there for me. They could just say, you know what, I love you. You know, I don't understand what you're going through, but I love you. And that gave me the strength to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And I love your idea about it, SOS buddy. I'm going to pass that on the Facebook site, Send Up the Count. That was started by another military member who was tired of seeing people commit suicide. And it's checking in with each other. And find a way, even on Facebook is a great way to check in. It is not a good way to socialize. You need the face-to-face socialization. But it is a good way to check in. And it's a good way that when you're having the dark time in the middle of the night, get in there and find some positive spots and ignore the trolls. You know,
exactly.
They just bring you down. But I appreciate so much being able to share about this, because I know, like you do, somebody out there is going to have hope. And that's what we're here for, to help people have hope. Because when people have hope, they can endure anything. That's how people survive the death camps. That's how people survive torture, is that there is a spark of hope. And I want to help people see that hope and give them their spark so they can keep going.
Well, you certainly did that today. You certainly shed some light on this, and your light shone through through your soul, through your energy, through being with us. So thank you again. And thank you to our listeners of Women Living Fully Radio. I invite you to share this episode on your social media channels to further expand the message about post-traumatic stress disorder and to share what Deborah and I have shared today. For past and upcoming episodes, go to our Blog Talk Radio channel at Women Living Fully. You can also stay in the know by subscribing to my Sunday morning newsletter by visiting my website at kedetraymond.com. Each Sunday morning, I send a weekly tip and an action step that can help you or your loved ones let go, move forward, and live fully. And I always have monthly blogs, local activities, online, in person, so lots of places there for us to get together. And if you're not part of our private Facebook group, you can request to join at womenlivingfully.com. Deborah, I'm going to sign off, but you stay on the line for me, please, because I want to say a thank you in person once I end the episode. So again, thank you, Deborah, for being our guest today. I sincerely appreciate you taking the time to be here. And I also thank you to our listeners. Until next time, have a fantastic day.